Thank you so much for that beautiful song. It is lovely. It touches my heart. So, with all this talk this morning, that was a beautiful daily word and a beautiful song. And it made me think about there's these certain flowers, you might know of them, that open only at night. And it said that nobody gets to see them, but there are those of us who do get to see them, those of us who wander the gardens at night. And I don't know for you, but if you've ever been in a park that you go to normally during the day or your own garden around a tree that's familiar, at night, it becomes an entirely different being. And so that's just something that came up for me there. And along with it goes a prayer from Paramahansa Yogananda, one of my favorite prayers. And he talks about, I will pray deeply until the darkness of meditation burns with thy flaming presence. And that where we think there is darkness, there is actually the flaming light of God. And so with that, let us enter into our meditation this morning. Bring our eyes closed to represent purposefully entering the darkness. We choose right now to shut away the outside world and let it go. And we might notice immediately across the screen of our mind go many thoughts. And so we just watch those thoughts, like passing clouds, like leaves floating down the river. Here one moment and gone the next. And now what do you see? For the next few moments, let us be only with the breath. And now feel the full weight of your body, wherever it is, however it is situated. And take a nice filling breath. Just fill up your lungs, a big inhale through the nose. And a nice open mouth exhale. And then let the breath go back to normal. Let the body relax, yet awaken the inner spine, the inner temple. As if you were opening the ceiling of your container so that light may flood in. From where this light actually comes is a divine mystery. But here now in our meditation together, it comes purely from our imagination. And so we imagine that we are filled with light, the light of God, and that any impurities at once are purified from us. As we become radiant beings, light workers, and children of God. And so we set the gaze purposefully on a single point of pure light. And we affirm together now with an inner conviction, as one soul, one life, I am one with God. All things are forgiven and released, and I am made whole. Thank you and amen. And then at once we simply open up the eyes and become fully present in one moment, one instant. Well, welcome again, everyone. Thank you for being here today. Let's see, how do I talk about this? I think I say that every Sunday. And at the same time, I want to talk about things today that are very challenging and very difficult. And I think that's perfect because of the times that we're in, very difficult, challenging times in our world. So I hope that I can challenge you as I challenge myself here. And you know, we often say around Unity, with these talks that we give, take what you want and leave the rest. That we say there's many paths to God and we welcome all of them. And that is absolutely true. Yet today I want to invite you deeper, that when something arises within you that challenges you, that irks you, that pulls you somewhere, and especially that pulls you down, I want you to ride that dragon down as far as you will. And when something seeks to lift you up, I want you to be lifted up as high as you can. And in that somewhere, maybe we can find, I don't know, something new, something we can hold on to, and something that we can use. So really, take what you want and leave the rest, but challenge yourself. One of my favorite teachings, there's many sacred teachings, sacred texts, sacred books, and they all talk about the same thing. They all talk about laying a hold of a power that is within us that gives us peace. They talk about the darkness and they talk about the light. They talk about the struggle of human beings and reaching beyond it to lay a hold of this light we've been talking about all morning. So really they say the same thing, but they just say them differently. So one of my favorites is A Course in Miracles. And it's many people's, spiritual path. People that get into that kind of stuff, the really stuff that makes your brain hurt sometimes, and it makes your heart wonder, but it's always nourishing, sometimes in a good way, and sometimes in a way that feels unsettling. For me, the whole thing is summed up in the introduction, and I wanted to share that with you today, and it brings to point our idea for the morning. In the introduction of A Course in Miracles, it says, "This is A Course in Miracles. It is a required course." Already I'm in opposition. You can't make me do anything. "Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what you want to take at a given time, because you will have to take all the courses. The course does not aim at teaching the meaning of love, for that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, which is your natural inheritance. The opposite of love is fear, but what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. This course can therefore be summed up very simply, in this way. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists." So really think about that. Nothing real can be threatened. And in any of my fears, my worries, or my concerns, don't I feel threatened? That something will be taken from me, that I won't get something I want, that I will lose something that I hold dear, or whatever it is. Well, yes, that's true. And then the next thought comes, nothing unreal exists. Oh, really? So if I'm afraid of it, it fundamentally doesn't exist. I can't handle that. But sometimes I can. And in the times when I can, It completes this whole curriculum in this last little sentence. Herein lies the peace of God. Right in that very realization that nothing real can be threatened, my whole life suddenly is just a gift, and that's all. Nothing more, nothing less. For as long or as short as it is, whatever problem I have is a gift. And whatever I fear losing does not exist. Okay, that's all. Let's go home. Well, it really actually kind of is. That's the whole essence of this thing. And so it was interesting when my little morning perch, you know, when I have my morning little warm drink and I read my little books that I always share with you. And Paramahansa Yogananda in his book, The Eternal, or Man's Eternal Quest. And I open it up this morning, another morning, a couple mornings ago. And I open it and I'm reading in this chapter, Lord, possess us with thy love. And he's talking about this thing, this love of God, this light of God that's always with us. And he says in there something, and then he puts his little asterisk, and in the asterisk, there's a little reference to the Bhagavad Gita, which is a part of a gigantic story called the Mahabharata. And the Bhagavad Gita is this little story about a battle. And a warrior is asking God, what is the outcome of that battle? And it's really a metaphor, the whole thing. It's about our internal battle that we live every day. And you know the one I'm talking about. But what was interesting about it, it is from this Bhagavad Gita book, from chapter 2, verse 16. And it says something so similar to the course teaching that I could not believe it. And I didn't know if maybe the woman who the Course in Miracles came through, Helen Schuckman, I didn't know if maybe she had read the Bhagavad Gita and was influenced. But I don't think so. Because when we look in the caverns of our mind, in the depths of the human soul, the one soul that we all affirmed from, we find these truths. And these truths never vary. They're always consistent and always reliable. And so this verse very simply said, that which is unreal is non-existent. That which is real cannot be non-existent. It's exact, isn't it? And I wondered about that deeply. And then the last line that compares to me to herein lies the peace of God from the Course in Miracles is men possessed of wisdom know the final truth about reality. And when they say men, that absolutely includes women. That means mankind, human beings possessed of wisdom know the final truth about reality. And what is the final truth? Nothing real can be threatened. Yeah. Savannah pointed to our thing on the wall here. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It gets really simple, but Igor doesn't like simple. Igor wants to play with things and be right and fight and all those things, and nobly so. And so we should, and so we shall, and in our world today, and so we are. We are locked in a battle of sorts. So let's look a little deeper. And, you know, I wanted to tie this together with the Bible, of course, because Unity uses the Bible. And I thought, what is the teaching in the Bible that's like that? And there's probably about 450, if you really looked in there. And for me, that Bible can be kind of confusing, you know. And it kind of reminds me of a story in school with Unity. I had this thing happen that didn't rub me the right way. And I learned a lot from it, actually. And that was, there was a question that came, we were studying some verse in there, and they said, what's your understanding of the Battle of Jericho? And that question kind of confused me because we were looking at that verse in a certain way. And I thought, but that question says, what's my understanding of it? And so I looked at that verse and I answered it from how I understood about it. And they said, no, that's not right. What do you mean? That's how I understand it, though. That's what you asked me. No, let's look at it a different way. But that's not what you asked me. So I really had to struggle with that. And can I be open-minded past my own understanding of something? You know, one thing that we talk about a lot, people who speak at Unity churches and Unity ministers, we talk a lot about how we address God, the names that we give God, and calling God He is passé. It is uncool. You don't do that anymore. But I don't mind it one bit, because I know what it means. It doesn't mean that God, a person, is going to walk down the aisle and come and say hello to me. But if God is everything, couldn't that happen? Well, absolutely. So it lends this question, how do you understand God? How do you understand the nature of your very being? And what is real to you? And are you willing to challenge that when you're threatened, when you're afraid, and when you are in utter darkness? Will you call to God? Not as an outside thing necessarily, but as an inner conviction to close the outer eyes and come into the inner world and have a conversation with God. And that's what got me going on this whole thing sometime during this last week. I realized that I'm constantly talking with God. And when I forget and it becomes about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and I suddenly start to talk to God again, I realize I haven't talked to you all day. And I say that out loud, but I say it out loud inside. So it's not external words, it's inside. Welcome to my crazy world. But there's this comfort that comes like no other. One of my very favorite times at night after I have my nighttime meditation and I go into lay in my bed, I close my eyes and I start talking with God. And it's this strange conversation that eerily reminds me of that Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna going to Krishna and saying, what does this mean? What does my life mean? What does this weird thing that I'm dealing with mean? What is Coronageddon, God? Can you help me to understand? Whatever it is. You remember Neil Donald Walsh, his entire series of books that launched him into fame from rags to riches was a book called Conversations with God. And if you know that story, you know that he was deeply angry at the world. And so he'd write letters to all these places condemning them and then never send them, because he couldn't have them hear what he was actually saying. And then one day he got so mad that he wrote a letter to God, and God started to write back through his pen, the same way that Course in Miracles came, and the same way that I understand this weird thing called God. What is it? I don't know. Sometimes I think it's just spelled backwards, because sometimes I think my dog is my God, you know? The things they do, and they show you all these teachings of how to just chill out, man. We are just here. Just be here. You remember I think I shared with you one time, the park bench, and the guy's sitting there, and his dog's right next to him, and it's got the little thought bubble, and the man's thinking about airplanes and buildings and businesses and bank accounts, and the dog's thinking about sitting on the park bench with his dude. I love that. We can be absolutely present with what is. So why am I worried about handling anything? It's such an irresponsible thing to say, especially from, you know, this unfortunate platform, as Krishnamurti calls it. But I don't come here to teach you. I come here to learn with you, to delve into these issues and to pull out the best that is in us as humanity. It's no small thing. So that is an invitation from me to you, to see what would happen if you initiated a conversation with God the way that you understand God to be for you. And what comfort might that bring? And what might it bring up in your life for you to see what is actually real and what is unreal? I dare you to play with it in the most childlike way. Does this actually have a reality? What does Ram Dass say? Get behind time. Get behind time, and you can begin to understand the nature of your reality. He also tells a pretty cool story. You want to hear it? Okay. You can't set it up like that and not tell the story, right? He talks about a little Chinese family, and the father has grown so old that he can't do anything. He can't clean the house, he can't cook a meal, and he can't work in the garden. And they have a garden because that's how they grow their own food. And so his son lives with him and his son's wife and their children. And the son's out working in the garden and dad's sitting on the porch. And the son thinks, he is worthless, worthless. And I'm going to do something about it. So he builds a box. He goes out and he builds a box. And he says, and he wheels it up to his dad. He said, Dad, get in. So dad gets in the box and he puts the lid on. He nails it shut. And he starts wheeling to the cliff. There's a knock on the box. And he says, yes, Dad. He says, I understand what you're doing. And I understand why. But maybe take me out of the box and then throw me over the cliff because your kids are going to need that box. It will happen to us all. We all come to the point where we must say goodbye to time, goodbye to our bodies, goodbye to every one of our attachments. So why not now? And perhaps that's true spiritual sight. So as I'm going through the Bible, and it's really Charles Fillmore that brings me to these places many times. You know, he really got into it a lot deeper than I ever have. And he led me to John chapter 9. And it's this part right after Jesus. He's always in confrontation with the Jews, and they're always condemning him. And he's always saying, look, I'm the child of God, and you got to leave me alone. And your stuff's ineffective with me. I don't do this stuff you guys do. I live in a different world. And so the Jews say, who do you think you are? And they said, we know the God of Abraham. And Jesus says something to them like, before Abraham was, I am. And they don't like that, so they pick up stones to begin throwing at Jesus, and he just disappears. You know how he does that? He disappears from the crowd. Where'd he go? And that's what I love about the verse I want to share with you, because it begins as he walked along. I always think about that. He slips out of the temple, barely avoiding death, and he's walking along, minding his own business, when he saw a man blind from birth. And I just want to share the story with you as it comes out of the Bible, because it's very interesting. So he sees a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Which, of course, indicates reincarnation. And Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. How interesting is that? As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva, and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. Wash in the pool of Siloam. Then he went and washed and came back, able to see. Very famous story, we've all heard it. Well, what did Jesus actually do to him? Is this a real story? Is it a parable? Is it a metaphor? The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some were saying, it's him. Others were saying, no, but it's someone like him. He kept saying, I am the man. But they kept asking him, then how were your eyes opened? He answered, the man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. Then I went and washed and received my sight. That easy. They said to him, where is he? He said, I do not know. Jesus liked to slip away like that. The Pharisees investigate the healing. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now, it was a Sabbath day, Jesus, when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. You're not supposed to do that on the Sabbath day, especially not that. Then the Pharisees also began to ask him how he had received his sight. And he said to them exactly what happened. He put mud on my eyes, then I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath." If he's not going to follow the rules, there's no way he can be from God, right? But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner perform such signs?" And they were divided. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him? It was your eyes that he opened." And he said, "He is a prophet." The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called his parents. They wanted proof. So they called the blind guy's parents and they asked them, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" They're trying to figure it out. His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we do not know how it is that he now sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he is of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. And if it's one thing human beings don't like, it's to be unaccepted and thrown out. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age. Go ask him." So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind, and they said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." Doesn't really matter when you get your sight what is what. You can just see clearly. They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And he answered them, "I've already told you, but you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are the disciples of Moses, who brought the Ten Commandments," which is a written law that they tried to follow as best they could to the letter. "We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man," this Jesus man, "we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, "Here is an astonishing thing, you naysayers. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will inside. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born entirely in sins, and you were trying to teach us?" And they drove him out. Get out. You know, there's some interesting things there. For one, this is a beggarly man who sat in his blindness and begged for scraps. Suddenly, he has the conviction to talk to the authorities in this manner, not caring if he gets driven out. And he does. The next ending of this story is entitled Spiritual Blindness. And it really wraps it up nicely. Jesus heard that they had driven him out. And when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered, "And who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him." Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "I came into this world for judgment so that those who did not see may see, and those who do see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said to him, "Surely we are not blind, are we?" The very authorities, the religious hoity-toities, the guys at the top of the ladder that know Moses' law inside and out, ask him, "Are we blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would not have sin. But now that you say we see, your sin remains." It is the whole entire teaching that nothing unreal exists and nothing real can be threatened. And in every place that you and I are afraid of something, we see what is not actually there. When we fear losing something, we are seeing what is unreal. And when we go into the darkness, the invisible world, and we lay hold of that divine power, we suddenly know what is real, and it cannot be threatened, no matter whatever happens. No matter what you think, no matter what you believe, the true nature of your soul is eternal, and it cannot be threatened by anyone or anything. So this whole thing is very challenging. And to talk about it, just like how these Pharisee guys probably read the Law of Moses, and to really pontificate about it and to really intellectually understand it but not live it is a very uncomfortable experience. So we must take it into the world and look with that deeper discernment that we've been talking about for weeks here on Sunday mornings. What is real? God, show me what is real. And our eyes will be opened. With the man who had the mud on his eyes, a very interesting part of that story that Charles Fillmore points out, Jesus covers his eyes with materiality, but who must wash them clean? Only him. And by him going to the holy water and washing his eyes away, he can see clearly, but that's a metaphor for the inner sight. And so at the end, when he's talking about these people needing to be blind in order to see, what he's talking about is shutting our outer eyes and going within, where suddenly, like we talked about, beyond the river, beyond the ocean, you see the presence of God through your inner knowing. And then you know, herein lies the peace of God. Here is my wisdom that I've been looking for, that I'm an eternal being. What is it? What do we say around here? There's one power and one presence of infinite goodness, and we are the essence of that power expressed. And through this art of prayer and meditation, we lay a hold of it and live as it. So the next time you come upon a beggar, realize there's much more going on there than what you think you see. I want to end just with a thing from Yogananda. He says, love him. He's talking about God. And the little chapter title is, don't waste time. Why not right now? Love him. Talk to him every second of your life, in activity, in silence, with deep prayer, with the unceasing desire of your heart. And you shall see the screen of delusion melt away. He who is playing hide and seek in the beauty of flowers, in souls and noble passions, in dreams, shall come forth and say, you and I have been apart a long time because I decided that you give me your love willingly. You were made in my image, and I wanted to see if you would use your freedom to give me your love. Thank you.